Chapter 3. The Russians are here. The Russians left, but the Germans marched into Rajin. The new border was established at the River Bug. For several weeks, this border was considered easy to cross. Those months were the honeymoon period of the Hitler-Stalin Pact. Among the Jewish population, mostly the young people, a lively migration eastward started to Brest-Litovsk, which was only about 80 kilometers from Rajin. Many, particularly older people, did not want to flee. They remember the bitter misery of refugees during World War I, and somehow found the courage to persevere. From their experiences during that war, they thought it would be possible to live with the Germans. However, depending on the army or police affiliation of the Germans who passed through, we could hardly tell the difference between the different police units and members of the Wehrmacht, the Jewish population soon felt the excesses of the Nazis: violence, pillage, desecration of synagogues, seizure of hostages, forced labour, all of which were often supported by Polish anti-Semites. These excesses were followed by periods in which we could live in relative calm. Optimists believed that each break was the end of our suffering, but pessimists believed the situation would become worse. The latter were right. My own situation changed somewhat, because after the communist King for a Day, Abraham Pinkus, disappeared, I was the only Jew left working at the electrical works. Unlike the Polish employees at the plant, I was able to communicate with the German soldiers, which made me an important person, a so-called useful Jew. Thus, I could help my family and move about relatively freely. I was also able to save my father from occasional forced labour, which was painful and often dangerous. But soon German-speaking migrants from the western part of Poland arrived, and my future began to look bleak. Finally, I succeeded in working exclusively for German authorities so that I could partly maintain my privileges as a useful Jew. When the German Wehrmacht marched in, the centre of the town, which was inhabited only by Jews, was evacuated and fenced in with barbed wire. The houses were used as barracks for soldiers and both big synagogues as horse stables. The same treatment was accorded the synagogue and yeshiva of the famous Rabbi of Rajin. The furnishings of the synagogues had been desecrated and demolished beforehand. Every new unit that marched into town seemed obligated to vandalize and destroy. After demanding contributions, seizing hostages, and plundering Jewish stores, the German occupation troops established themselves. The German authorities tightened the screws on us Jews increasingly tighter. Theft, murder, and forced labor in rain, snow, and mud became part of the everyday routine. Instead of horses, Jews were harnessed to wagons loaded with coal and other goods. A favorite sadistic sport was cutting Jews' beards off with a knife or scissors, or setting them on fire. Many Jews with beards wore bandages on their faces, pretending to be wounded already. Every Jewish establishment and prayer house was automatically desecrated. Judenrat was founded. In this city, only one person could be the chosen elder of the Jews: Herr David Lichtenstein, rich, well-respected, energetic, and arrogant. He had the chutzpah to call everyone by their first names. He had all the traits one would expect of a Jewish elder. Thanks to his intelligence, he was sometimes able to tame the uniformed German sadists by means of kind words and expensive gifts, and to prevent them from dragging the Jews off to work at any time, day or night. Still, life became more difficult with each new day. There were only a few friends left, since most of them had fled to the Russians or were planning to do so, as they realized that life under the Nazis would be impossible. I had similar thoughts, although my family had stayed here. It was difficult for me to make up my mind. After all, I was barely 17 years old, and had never been separated from my family, except for vacations at the Hashomer Hatzair summer camp, where I was in the company of 50 to 100 friends of the same age. One day I saw how SS members herded up the well-respected and officially appointed Rav, his name was Fein, along with other well-known religious bearded Jews, to the bus stop in the center of town. They were ordered to bring their Torahs and to unroll them. They were forced to put on their talit and tefillin, and then to sing and dance on their Torahs. Their beards were cut off with knives and scissors or were set on fire. They were brutally tortured and beaten by the SS. As I witnessed that with my own eyes, I decided to flee eastward immediately. Several cruel episodes of this kind occurred. Due to those, our famous Rabbi Liner lived in hiding with his Hasidic followers. Later he went to Vlodawa, a border town on the Bug, where he disguised himself as a shoemaker. As our situation became worse, his words of consolation and encouragement reached us. They gave us courage and new faith. He called upon the Jews to resist and organize themselves in the woods. I do not know exactly how he died. He was probably denounced and then shot by the SS. On November 5th, 1939, I packed my knapsack, took my bicycle and headed east in the direction of the Bug, which was about 80 kilometers from Rajin. With the unnerving events of the last few days still fresh in my mind, I reached the border at Vlodawa within a few hours. In the evening, I joined a group of people who were headed for the same destination. After paying smugglers, we, 8 to 10 people, climbed into a small boat to cross the River Bug and proceeded to Brest-Litovsk. I carried my bicycle over my head. After 20 minutes, we reached the opposite bank of the river. It must have been around midnight, and we had to hide again, tired, hungry, and thirsty. After walking through the darkness of night, I fell asleep somewhere. When I woke up in the morning, I noticed that I had slept in the mud close to a deserted summer house in Domacheva, near Brest-Litovsk. My bicycle had disappeared. We saw Russian soldiers. They saw us. It appeared to be a sort of silent tolerance and understanding.